Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived. This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
All right, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of the city of Chicago. And I know some of you joined me yesterday and the day before, and I was just so passionate because of some of the things that are going on in Chicago pertaining the crime statistics and three little children being shot down dead, maybe four now, in the city of Chicago. So I was just so passionate about that because it hurt because the police department act as if they do not play a role in deterring crime. I mean, you know, they're just covering their asses, like I just said. I was very passionate yesterday. I was stuttering, and I hope you guys forgive me for that. But it was just something that was just so hard to take, night after night, weekend after weekend. Excuses after excuses. You, at some point, you blow your top. You know, you really do blow your top, especially when you're an advocate against this kind of thing happening. And you pay these police officers, you pay the mayor, your taxpayer money is going all over the place, and you're getting no results. All you're getting is excuse. It's not my fault. It's not a police problem. It is a police problem. I know there's a lot of people out there that disagree with me. You know, that's fine. I mean, you can disagree all you want, but that's my point of view, and I think it's the correct point of view. Everybody has their opinions. I have mine. Thank you so much. And, you know, the weekend is coming up in Chicago, and I'm more afraid than ever because the weekends have been totally bloody. And I'm totally disappointed in Donald Trump because he said he was going to do something about the crime in the city of Chicago. So far, nothing has been done. He has not come to Chicago. It's just more talk, more empty talk of grandstanding by Donald Trump. And We need, as I've said before yesterday, we need here in Chicago to make crime the number one priority. They're not doing it. They will never do it. And this is why we have to, this is why we need new leadership. We got to vote these people out and put people in who are going to listen to us, who are going to do what we want them to do, or we will not give them our vote. And some of these people, they think because they're in office, they think because they're the mayor or they're the governor or they're the president, that they don't have to listen to us anymore. They think because they're a congressman or a senator that they do not have to listen to us anymore. That they're living in a fantasy world if they're thinking that. But I'm pretty sure a lot of people are thinking that in high places, you know. But as I said yesterday, folks, we have people power, and we can use that people power to move mountains, even to change things about Washington, D.C. We have to galvanize. Today, they were protesting. The immigrants were taking a day off work in America to show that. I agree in somewhat, and in some ways I disagree. I agree that they want to flex their muscle, but I do not agree with them wanting to shut down America to try to prove a point that they are vital to the American economy. I don't think that people coming from other countries to try and shut down America to make a point because they love this country. And I've said this before, and I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but that's fine. I think immigrants, Mexican immigrants, it's a lot of them. I think it's 11 million, probably a little less now because Donald Trump has been deporting people. But anyway, it's still in the thousands. It's still up there. Not in the thousands, but in the millions. And I mean, a lot of these people come from Mexico. A lot of these people are brought over here, come over here on visas, and they overstay their visas. They have children, and then they, you know, they feel as if they have a foothold in America because they go off and have a baby, and that baby becomes an American citizen if it's born on this in this country. My thing is, why are you protesting being an immigrant in America when you should be protesting being a citizen in your own country? They could take their economic power and strength back to Mexico to build Mexico, to make Mexico a better country, as where they can live, you know, among their own origin. Why do this to America? I know there's a lot of people out there that are going to disagree with me. That's fine. But my thing is, you have a country. I'm not saying get out of America. I'm saying that you have a country of your own, Mexico. What is the problem in Mexico that makes you want to come over to the United States? Stay in Mexico and fix the problem in Mexico. If it's the economy, these activists, these Mexican activists over here in this in America should be doing what they're doing here in Mexico to get Mexico to be a better country, so their citizens will not have to cross the border illegally, so their citizens will not have to get a visa, come over to America and overstay that visa and then go somewhere and have a child, thinking that's going to get them a foothold in America. I just think it's wrong. I just think it's wrong. And to shut down America, to say that immigrants built America, that America will not be anything without immigrants, which I totally disagree with. I don't believe it. You know, I think America, if there wasn't an immigrant in America, I think America would still be the greatest country in the world as it is now. 347-857-1762. I just think that, you know, I think in order to make the world a better place, I think that's one of the things people should start doing. Start looking at their own country, changing things in their own country so they don't have to cross the border illegally. They don't have to apply for visas and then overstay their visas. and then come over here legally and have a child or a baby, or just bringing a child across the border, and that child grows up, that child gets deported if that child doesn't become an American citizen. I'm all for immigrants. I do think immigrants have done great things for America. I mean, picking fruit, for instance, I think it's a lowly job, but somebody had to do it. They stepped up to the plate. And most of them, I do believe, most of the immigrants in the United States, basically all they want to do is work. But still and all, there are people who are going to do bad things. Bad things, whether they're Americans or they're illegal. Or American immigrants, or they're just illegal immigrants, you know. And I hope my listeners out there don't get me wrong. I'm not racist. I'm not saying that they should all be deported. I'm just saying that they should look in their own yard first before they start messing up or protesting in America. Protest your country, Mexico. There's a lot of things wrong economically with Mexico. Why not take that energy that you have here, or the things that you've learned here, take that back to Mexico to make Mexico as great as Mexico can be. That's my thought. Why come over here to shut down America? Why not go back and shut down Mexico for its human rights violations, for its economic policies? That's your country. You should be proud of it. But yet you run over here to America, and then you start, you know, shutting down America because you feel that you want to be seen. Even if you are doing this because of Donald Trump's policies. I mean, if you don't like his policies, you know, no one is stopping you from going back to Mexico or wherever you may have come from. You know, you're not being forced to stay here, because I have a feeling that this one-day stoppage of immigrant workers around America, I have a feeling to the Trump administration, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. This man is going to do what he's going to do. He's going to do what he's going to do. I mean, this is not going to prove anything. And I don't think that a one-day stoppage in America of immigrants workers are going to shut down America. That's not going to happen. Americans are not going to let that happen. You know, so I just feel that they should, you know, worry about their own country. You know, you hear a lot of them saying, well, I love this country. I love this. Of course, what else are they going to say? They hate America? Give me a break. You know, I mean, but they have a country, Mexico, and obviously there's some things in Mexico that they don't like. That's why they head over here to America. I guess what I'm saying is stay in Mexico and protest Mexico. Shut down Mexico, your country, until it conforms to your strategies and your beliefs. Don't come over here and try to... I just don't like it. I just don't come over here from another country and try to shut down America because America is not doing what you want them to do. What about your own country? Shut down your own country until they conform to the ways that you are seeking. You know, I just think it's unfair. I know it's a lot of people out there saying this and saying that, but you know, I totally agree with it. The George Wilder Jr. Show totally agrees with it. And I'm not a racist. I'm not for the travel ban. I'm not for any of that. I'm just for common sense. Common sense. America is not your country. You come over here from another country and you try to shut America down by taking one day off from work, one day off of school. And it's not going to work. Donald Trump is not going to care. The Donald Trump administration is just going to look at you and say, hey, wow, we got to deport those people. That's all he's going to do. That's all this administration is going to do. And that's what they're saying. Oh, wow, they're all out there. We got to get him. You just letting him know where you are so he can send the immigration forces out to pick you up, especially if you are illegal.
And for a lot of people taking off school to do this, leaving their classes, this is totally, that's totally stupid. I mean, you're going to be marked absent, you know, that's crazy. You're going to lose one day of instruction that, you know, that you're going to probably need for in the future, maybe even to graduate. Who knows? And teachers are against it. Teachers are against this thing because their classes are empty. At least half or three quarters of the class are empty because people are out there protesting something that they should be protesting in their own country to make it great. To make it great. If you don't like what the politicians or the government is doing in your own country of Mexico, protest it. Shut it down until these people conform to what you want. Don't come over to some other country that you came illegally and overstayed your visa and try to, you know, demand certain things. That's, you know, not right, you know. And I know, like I said before, I know there's going to be people, George, what are you? I mean, it's common sense, I think. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. We're going to take, I believe we're going to take a musical break here, folks. And we do have a guest. that person should be along shortly. Maybe. All right, folks, thank you for tuning into the George Wilder Jr. Show. If you're not listening, you should be listening. There's so much I'm talking about here. And we're in some trying times here, folks. What can I tell you? And I want to say we are in the city of Chicago and probably around America. This is February. We're in the month of February, the second month of 2017, which I think is a great year. I think it's going to be a wonderful year for America if Trump don't become impeached. I think it's going to be a great time for America. But what I really wanted to say is that this is winter, February 2017. This is winter. And the forecast for tomorrow is 60 degrees. I think on into next week, it's going to be in the 60s in the city of Chicago. Wow. And if you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, get out there and enjoy yourself, whether you're just walking around the corner. I mean, just get out there. The sun is going to be out. It's going to be beautiful. The hell with snow, the hell with freezing cold. Get out there and enjoy yourself, especially if you are a senior, you're an elder. Get out there and enjoy the weather. Get you some exercise, some clean air into your lungs. It's going to be beautiful. Hopefully, if this pans out and if it's correct, because a lot of times these guys are wrong, you know. But anyway, but it's nice to dream about that it could actually be 60 tomorrow. And yours truly will be out and about. Believe me, we are not going to be sitting in a studio. All righty. It is beautiful. Like I said before, I'm broadcasting live. This is live. This is not a podcast, but it will be as soon as the show is over. And I want to thank a lot of my guests who have been so far been on the show this week. They were beautiful. They were wonderful. I'm pretty sure if you were listening, you learned a hell of a lot. And because I did. I mean, every guest that comes on the show, I you know, I learned something. I'm not the smartest guy in the world. I'm not the best radio show host out there, but I'm in the mix. So I do learn just like you do. And I've said several times on the show, you never stop learning. If you should stop learning, you're dead. I don't care if you're 64 or 164. You know, if you stop learning, if you stop exercising your brain, you're dead. You know, and that's another thing I want to say when I'm talking about exercising your brain. I mean, that's badly needed. Actually, I'm trying to get my thought here straight. That's badly needed, especially among the seniors. I mean, if you want to stave off dementia, Alzheimer's, and some of these diseases of the brain, exercise your brain. What are some of the things you can do to exercise your brain? Read, write, play games, you know, play thinking games, spelling games, play, you know, Sudoku or passwords, you know, video games. You have to keep your brain active. You have to keep it active, because just like anything, if you don't keep your brain active, it's going to fail you. If you don't keep your body healthy and in shape, it's going to fail you. So your body and your brain goes together, but it's two different parts. You know, you got to exercise your body to keep it good in shape, to keep from, I mean, because exercise, folks, believe it or not, wards off or even can eliminate a lot of these diseases, diabetes, cancer, heart disease. Exercise can get rid of a lot of these things that you may have or are susceptible to get. So exercise is very, very important. You know, I mean, and I've said this several times on the show, you don't have to pay a $100 membership for some gym. You can just do 30 to 40, maybe a good hour worth of exercise each day. And it doesn't have to be strenuous. I mean, if you don't want it to be, okay? But basically, if you walk for 30, 40 to 50 minutes a day, that's good enough. And if you lifting weights for strength to build muscle, you can do that for 15 minutes a day. And you will not be out of any pocket money by joining some gym. I think the only people who actually join gyms are people who are looking for that sculpted look. You know, and that's fine. That's what they want. That's great. But if you are, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, all you need to do is walk, unless you want to join a gym. I'm not saying do not join a gym now. I mean, gyms are essential, and they do play a big part in your health, nutrition, and all of that kind of stuff. So I'm just saying, if you don't want to join a gym or if it's not in your budget, then you can always walk it off, and it will be just as beneficial, because I believe each and every day, everyone out here, I don't care how old you are, we all need at least 1 hour worth of exercise each day. Each day. And that's the truth. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show from Blog Talk Radio out of the city of Chicago. I'm located on the north side, broadcasting out of my wonderful studio here. I just love it here. And it's warm. I mean, it doesn't feel like winter. There's no snow outside. It feels like the beginning of springtime. But you know what? Whenever we get this kind of weather, this balmy weather or this unseasonal type weather, and it's great weather, I always feel that we are being set up for the kill. Yeah. You know, February has been so far in the city of Chicago, and I hope where you are, it's been some great, great weather. I know the East has been covered with snow, but, you know, the Midwest, it has been great weather-wise. And And I do believe we've been set up for the kill, because if we're not having all of this weather in February that we should be having, we're going to get it in March or April. Yeah. And you got a lot of people out here talking climate change. That could be a possibility. It could be a possibility. I'm not a scientist. I don't know. I listen and I watch and I pay attention. It could be climate change. It could be El Nino. I don't know. I'm not in that circle of information or that circle of no, all I know is that it's going to be 60 degrees tomorrow by what these guys are saying on the weather forecast and all this thing. And it's going to be beautiful. And if it's beautiful, I want my elderly and seniors to get out there and exercise, enjoy the weather, smile, laugh, grin, joke, be as giddy as you can, because this doesn't happen all the time, especially in February, you know, so it's going to be great. And I hope that people, you know, all over the world, I know, because this radio show reaches everybody, and that's a good thing. And that's one of the reasons why I do it, to inform people, to inspire, educate, empower, if I can, and to try to lift up stuff like that. But it's going to be beautiful. I can't wait to get out there, you know. And I know my son is out there somewhere. I'm pretty sure he's enjoying the weather. And I hope you are too. All right. You've been listening to the George Waddle Jr. Show. Follow me right here. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Instagram. I'm on Twitter. I'm all over the place. I'm always posting stuff. I try to be a very interesting guy. You know, and because I think people want that in their talk show host. They want your talk show. They want their talk show host to be interesting. And I try to be that. All right. We do have a guest today, Jamal Maxam. Okay. I got that right. Jamal Maxam is going to be on the show today. Hopefully, if nothing comes up, because people do cancel. And that's understood. I had a guest to cancel earlier today. And I always respect and look up to people who are booked for the show, who are scheduled to be on the show. Suddenly they decide not to be on the show because of something here or other. And they contact me and they say, George, well, I'm not going to be able to make your show. George, I'm going to have to cancel. That's great. I love that. You know, I mean, those people will be on the show at some later date because they called and said, or they emailed me and said that they were not going to be on the show. That makes me want to open up a spot for them in the future to be on the show. That's beautiful. But you have some guests. On the other hand, you have some guests that I book for the show, that I have booked for the show. They don't call. Don't show up. They don't call. They don't do anything. They just decide not to show up. And those guests will never be on my show again. They'll never be booked again. But you have to have respect for people. You know, I mean, if I book you for a show, I expect you to be here. I expect you to show up. If you decide not to show up, then drop me an email. Drop me something in the inbox saying that you're not going to be able to make it. And then maybe I can reschedule you for a later date. I mean, that's the way we do it in this industry. And that's how it goes. I don't think that's too bad. I don't think that's too harsh, you know, it's like if you're taking off of work, you want to you want to let your boss know that you won't be in today. You know, stuff like that. It's similar to that. All right, you've been listening to George Waddle Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. We're going to do this.
Do blacks commit more crimes than other races? The simple answer to this question is yes. The black population of the United States is approximately 13%, and the white population is approximately 62%. These are the FBI crime statistics for 2014, where blacks accounted for 27.8% of the total amount of arrests for that year, an obviously disproportionate amount for a population of 13%. The overall level of arrests for black people is higher than might be expected in almost every category, except for driving under the influence of alcohol. Black people accounted for most of the arrests for murder, 51.3%, robbery, 55.9%, and gambling, 58.9%. They were also significantly above average in several other categories. Weapons crimes, 40.7%.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting out of the city of Chicago. Like I just got through saying, folks, it's going to be 60 degrees in February tomorrow in this city, in this town, and that is just ridiculous. But we are going to take it. We are going to enjoy it. I'm going to be out there running in my shorts. 60 degrees in the middle of winter, right? All right, let's go to the phone. Let's see, we have, all right, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hey, this is Jamal Maxim, author of Skip the Rat Race.
Yeah, I got you here on my screen. And thanks for joining me, man. Thank you. I know you've been listening to my rant. I mean, I just rant every day on the show. I mean, sometimes you get so passionate about this, you get passionate about this, you get passionate about that, and people say, hey, George, you are passionate. That is so nice. You know. So give us a little bit of your bio and tell us a little bit about this Skip the Rat Race thing.
Well, basically, I'll start with an introduction about the book. The book is
okay.
About right. Really the concept of the book is really on how to define success and really how okay. to recognize that success is a product from the inside out. A lot of people try to achieve success through definitions that are given to them by other people. They say, well, if you get this house, you get this job, you get this car, if you get this type of spouse, then you're successful. And then when people achieve those things, they still feel empty. And so what I help people do in this book is to define what success looks like for them, because it would look different for every person, and then help them identify the qualities that they already have and how to maximize those qualities to achieve success. My definition of success is simply... No, go ahead.
No, you know what? You're right. You're right. People can achieve so much, get everything that they want and get everything that they've dreamed about. And after they achieve these things, after they obtain them, they're not satisfied. They're not fulfilled. You know,
exactly.
I can protest to that because it has happened to me, you know, mm-hmm. and I know people that it has happened to. I mean, you get everything you want, your house, the car, the pool in the backyard, you know, and then all of a sudden you're throwing yourself on the couch or the bed and say, I'm still not happy.
Exactly. And so people, I define success as this, making your dream become a reality. And so you have to figure out what that dream is and what it looks like. And so for some people, that dream is through entrepreneurship. It's okay, I went to school, I got my degree, or I've gone through this training. Now it's time for me to launch out on the idea that I have for myself. For other people, it might not be entrepreneurship. It may just be, okay, I'm a settle in with this company and help somebody else make their vision a reality. And so it looks different for everybody, but I think sometimes we get into this cookie cutter mode and say, you have to do this to be successful. You have to be this way. You know, when I was in school, they said, you know, go to college, get your degree, get a good job. Nobody ever said, get your degree, then decide if you want to work for somebody else or create your own jobs, which is a totally different mindset. So I use this book to really help shape and shift some perspectives so that people can really begin to be happy in life.
All right. Do you have the book with you? Can you read us an excerpt?
Yeah, I can read you an excerpt. The book will not be released until July. I'm still adding a few more pieces to it. But it'll be out this year in July, but I can read you an excerpt from what we have already.
Okay.
So I'm gonna find a good excerpt. Well, one excerpt, I have a section that talks about maturity, and it says your degree of productivity is directly correlated to your maturity. A person that is immature will show little productivity despite how skilled they are. A person that is mature but has little skill can still be productive because they will learn what they need to make up for in their skill deficiencies. The immature refuse to learn because they feel that they know it already and that new knowledge and new techniques do not apply to them. If a person wants to increase their productivity and maximize their success, they have to come to a place where they are willing to always be available and embrace fresh perspectives and fresh approaches. There is a difference between demonstrating competency and feeling as if you have no room to grow. And so I talk about, you know, that's just a little clip because people, yeah. I've seen that in the workplace. I've seen people who are skilled but are immature. And so they don't want to grow. They don't want to take on a new perspective. They think they know it all. You know, in training meetings, they think it doesn't apply to them because they're the greatest thing in sliced bread. But you can see someone who's not as skilled but more mature, and they are hungry. They're ready to learn. And so they quickly make up for their deficiency because they're always learning.
Yeah, I totally agree. Some people in the workplace are just they're not go-getters. And in some cases, some of the go-getters in the workplace will try some of the people who are not go-getters in the workplace will try to stop the person who is actually a go-getter. You know, exactly. I've been around those type of people, you know. And I think that's wrong. And you know, okay, I want to ask some of your personal experiences.
The whole environment.
Go ahead.
No, I was saying, which I was just adding on to what you said, because it kills the culture of the whole environment. Because you can't work as a team with people who think they know it all and they just want to, and they think everything is for everybody else. And so they, no matter how skilled a person is, there's always more to learn. And the perfect person, well, I wouldn't say perfect, but the best kind of person to work with or have work for you if you're in leadership is somebody who's skilled but still hungry. Because that's the person who will produce the way you need them to. They'll bang it out, but they'll still try to learn as much as they can to keep improving on what they do.
Are some of your life experiences going to be incorporated into this book?
Yes, because I serve as an elementary school principal in addition to being an author. And so a lot of these principles have come from trial and error life experiences with leading teachers in an inner city environment. And so like that last excerpt, you know, was from some life experience from some people I've worked with who I won't say their names. but you'll see a lot of that comes from my life experiences. And so I found that as I just started documenting what I was going through and really taking myself out of the situation to figure out, because it first started with self-improvement. It was like, okay, what did I learn from this situation? How can I make myself a better leader? And then as I really started pulling myself out of situations and looking at them objectively and really just kind of documenting for my own growth, I was like, oh my gosh, I think. And then I started sharing it with other people and I found it was really helping them and offering them fresh perspectives.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful. And it's nothing like sharing your life experiences with other people who have gone through some of the things that you have gone through, and you've learned a lot, and learning a lot, you want to share that with other people who are also being successful in what you have experienced, because you are now successful.
Right, exactly. And really, that's really the key, because everybody shouldn't make the same mistakes, and everybody shouldn't have to try to find their way through when they're dealing with a situation. I mean, if I can help somebody go through a situation with a fresh perspective without having to deal with the hardship that comes with the challenges, then I think it'll be, you know, it's worthwhile. Because sometimes when we face challenges, we think we're the only ones who've dealt with it. We kind of feel isolated and almost want to question ourselves, like, what's wrong with me? You know, why? And so, but to see that other people have gone through it, and you know, you're not weird because you are experiencing this or feeling this because of the situation.
I totally.
It really gives you
a
fresh perspective to really, to just have a sense of joy. Because, you know, some of that stuff can sap your joy and, you know, have you feeling all type of ways.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jamal Maxam on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Do you plan on continuing to write about things like this after your first book comes out?
Absolutely. You know, my goal is to put this book out, and then, you know, I'll be doing some coaching and some speaking engagement, but I will continue. I will always continue to write and, you know, release whatever information I can just to really, really help people. Because I do have a section in my book that I'm currently developing, and it talks about what to do when you know you have CEO type qualities, but you still work for somebody else. You know, that struggle of being an independent leader, but you're still working for somebody else, you know, and that frustration that a person could feel. And so I think just shedding light on these things really, you know, as I said before, will help people recognize where they are in their journey to achieving their goal and making their dream a reality. And they can say, okay, I'm still on the right track.
Do you think most people enjoy working for someone else, or would they just rather be working for themselves? Do you think other people enjoy working for someone else in general?
Well, I think that's kind of a
Or should they work
question.
For someone else?
I think that's kind of a twofold question, because I feel like if you understand the purpose behind where you're working and who, if you're working for someone else, then you can enjoy it. I think a lot of people don't enjoy working for someone else for two reasons. One, because they don't like being told what to do, and they want the freedom of working for themselves. And two, they don't understand the purpose behind why they're working for someone else. So I think, you know, in general, if a person understands why they work for that person and understand their gifts and their skill set, they can begin to enjoy it. But if ultimately, if their dream is to be an entrepreneur, there will come a time where they would just not enjoy working for anybody. They could have the best supervisors or bosses in the world, can be paid the greatest, you know, amount of salary. They just won't be happy until they're in that place where they're fulfilling, walking out their dream. So I think it's kind of two-folded. One comes from a misunderstanding. The other one comes from just not fulfilling their dream.
Well, for me personally, I worked for other people for a long time, and I only worked for them because I wanted to one day go into my own business, do my own thing, call my own shots.
And
you know, I had that dream of just, you know, I guess like you say, I got tired of the other guy telling me what to do, especially if I didn't think what he told me was the right thing to do. And a lot of these supervisors and managers will tell you to do things that, you know, they wouldn't do. And I just said, hey, this has to stop, you know, because with my skill set, my mindset, and my abilities, I knew I had what it took to work for myself. So I guess you can say that I was motivated. I had that ambition, and I went out there and I did it. Some people can't do that.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know.
Yeah. Right. They don't have the understanding of what I call sweat equity. Now, your case, you sound like you did what Robert Kiyosaki talks about in his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It sounds like you worked with people for what you could learn to set yourself up to be successful in the next phase, which is totally cool, because we can practice on other people's dime, and I really believe in that. But some people, others don't. Others have the vision and have the desire to be an entrepreneur and launch out, but they don't have an understanding of the sweat equity that it takes. You know, they can have a vision board on the wall, but never take strategic steps to accomplish what they have on the vision board. And so those are the people who you kind of either have to kick in the butt to make them move, or they will forever be disgruntled because their dream won't fulfill their dream, and they'll be mad and blame everybody else.
Yeah. Are you a motivational speaker, or you ever thought about going in that direction?
Yeah, my publisher has been pushing me in that direction just because of the content of the book and hearing me speak and hearing me talk. They've been really
That's what I'm saying. Jamal Maxam on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Man, you were great. You were wonderful. I hope you come back someday, because I think my audience really, really loved you. And I want to say, where can we find this book? Once this book is published, where can we find it? Give us a website where we can go, or, you know, a blog or something where we can go and learn more about you.
All right. Well, I just want to respond first by saying thank you, man. I appreciate you for having me on the show. You know, it truly was an honor and a joy to talk. The book will be released everywhere on my publisher, Black Heart Books, which is Jerry Roberts' company. And so it'll be available everywhere come July. You'll be able to get it on Amazon. But to really keep up with me right now, you can go to my Facebook page for Skip the Rat Race. But also you can go to my website, jamalmaxam.org. And every week I post a video success tip right on my homepage, and just really to give people, you know, something to help them get through their week. And so you keep up with me there.
Okay. Is there anything you want to say that you haven't said already?
No, I'm good. I think I've shared it all.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks for being on the show. I want to say one more thing. Would you like a link to the show? Maybe you can put it on your website or your blog, and people can come by and listen to you on the show on your website or blog. I can send you the link to the show.
Absolutely. Send me that. Yes. Yeah, all right. I'll put it on my website and everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean, because you were great. You sound good. And I hope one day you, just like your publisher wants, that you get into motivational speaking, because you do sound good. You have a great voice and you have a great grasp of what you want to do and what you're talking about. I appreciate that. And thanks for being on the show.
Hey, thank you. I appreciate you.
Bye-bye. All right, that was Jamal Maxam on the George Wilder Jr. Show talking about his soon-to-be-released book, Skip the Rat Race. I'm assuming that the connotation of that means work for yourself, you know, if you don't want to be, you know, working for someone else. All right, we'll be right back. We're going to do this. Thanks, folks.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together.
My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are 3 times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me 2 things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day. His dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me. Because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question, why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask, because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser, because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying, as if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence. Like me, because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Once again, I want to say thanks to my guest, Jamal Maxam, and I wish him all the luck in the world at his endeavors. All right, I'm on the Huffington Post page, and it says Trump's new pick rejects offer. My God. Trump throwing his hands up in the air. Another person rejects my offer. Wow, this guy will go down in history as the most inept president of the United States, the 45th president of the United States. Another one of his picks, billionaires, reject his offer. Why? They got to come up with some sort of a spin to say why they don't want to work for Donald Trump. Let's see what the article says, if we can click on it. Okay, Trump's pick to replace Michael Flynn, he turns down the offer. I guess he doesn't want to be a part of a dysfunctional administration. I mean, if he chose me for a cabinet pick in his administration, Donald Trump, I think I would turn it down. I said, no, man, I don't want to work for you. I don't care how much money you're going to pay. I don't want to work for you. I mean, you're not going to be in office long, it seems. People are turning him down left and right. People are protesting him. I never seen a president like Donald Trump protest as much as he has been in my entire life. I'm pretty sure yours, and I'm up there. And I just never, this is totally unprecedented. It's going to go straight down into history as one of the most, you know, I mean, these guys are the good fellas in the White House. I mean, these are gangsters. These are mobsters. These are thugs in the White House. I can imagine what these guys are talking about in the back rooms. They're sounding like, because from my point of view, I don't think any of them know what they're doing. So they're probably talking like street thugs when the camera is not on them. When there's no TV cameras around, they're probably just, you know, going into their thug talk, gangster talk in the White House, because that's what it looks like. That's what it appears to be. And Donald Trump, he really, really has it out for the media. This guy just cannot stand the media. He done found two brand new words that he's going to be using throughout his term. Fake news. He's calling fake news where there is no fake news. This is just an excuse he's making up to try to say people are trying to discredit him as president of the United States. Donald Trump is discrediting himself. And that's been said many, 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 many times. He's discrediting himself. He's the one who's making himself look bad by fighting with the media. And the media is not going to back down. They're not going to be bullied and bluffed and pushed around by Donald Trump. You know, this is not going to happen. The more he tries to do that, the more they're going to blast him with the truth. And we know Donald Trump does not want to hear the truth. He can't stand the truth, but the media is going to put the truth in his face every chance they get. And he's going to call it fake news. He's going to call it unfair. He's going to say they're losers, all this kind of thing. But anyway, from what I'm reading here, Trump's pick to replace Michael Flynn turns down the offer. The guy he fired. The thing about it, Trump fired this guy, but then after he fired him, he said that he was a great employee. He was a good man. The media brought him down. And, you know, I mean, why, if he was all of those things, why would you fire him? You know, he colluded with Russia and he didn't tell Pence, or maybe he did tell Pence. Who knows? Donald Trump is talking out of the side of his mouth, and sometimes we don't know what the hell he's saying. He held a 77-minute press conference today with the media, and he just virtually said, I'm the president, I'm the king, listen to me and shut up. I answer the questions that I want to answer. The ones I don't want to answer, don't say nothing to me about it. I mean, Donald Trump thinks he's king. He thinks he's emperor, and we are all peasants. But he's got a problem in the White House. He constantly says that there is no friction in the White House, but there is, because anytime three or four people turn him down that he has chosen to be cabinet members in his administration, there is something wrong there. But he won't admit it. Of course, he's not going to admit it, because he doesn't want the media to write the truth about it. Because if the media writes the truth about it, if they dig and find the truth and print it, he's going to say that it's fake news. Donald Trump is like Bernie Sanders has said many times. He's a pathological liar. Bernie Sanders at one point called Donald Trump a fraud. And I'm pretty sure a lot of people agree with that. Donald Trump, I don't know what to say about Donald Trump. I mean, I can say one thing about him, and next day I can say something else about him. I really don't like talking about him much on this show, but he's the president of the United States. I didn't vote for him. And there's a lot of people out here who are saying that they didn't vote for him. So, hey, wow, he's not my president. But still in all, he is the president. And I actually think that Donald Trump is in over his head. I think that he didn't realize the scale and scope of the presidency. I really don't, because this guy is doing things. He's doing things too fast. He's doing things without thinking. He does some things he doesn't know how to do. He's calling the shots himself, and he doesn't know what he's doing. I'm pretty sure he's calling Obama and Bush on some things that he doesn't understand, or on some things that he wants to do, and he wants them to tell him how to do them. I just think Donald Trump is just learning on the fly. I mean, this is, he's a businessman. He's a TV show host. He's not a politician. He never had or held a political post of any kind, a public post of any kind. And yet he's propelled to the presidency of the United States. And he wants us all to know that he knows what he's doing. He's fighting with the press day in and day out. His surrogates, the people who are licking his boots, he sent out to these cable shows, get on these cable shows and try to bully and intimidate the host on those cable shows. And I am just so happy to find out that some of these people, some of the hosts on these cable shows are standing up to these liars that Donald Trump sent out to be on over the airwaves. I would never have any of these people on my show. Kelly Conway, this Stephen something. I would never have them, any of those guys on my show, because they look to try to take over your show. They look to try to control it, to tell you what to do. And even though it's your show, but they try to come on and just lie and spin and actually do not answer the questions that are asked. They'll spin and lie and talk about something else because they feel that they are working for Donald Trump and they should be listened to, and the rest of us should just shut the hell up. Well, it's not going to happen like that. I mean, they do have a fight with the media, and I think they're picking the fight with the wrong group of folks. I don't think you pick a fight with the media, because the media, they can build you up and they can tear you down. I don't think the media is going to sit back and let Donald Trump tell them what to do, how to do it, when to do it, what to write, what not to write. You know, I don't think the media is going to do that. They're not going to be bullied and taunted by Donald Trump. It's just not going to happen. They have a job to do, and they're independent of Donald Trump. They have a job to do. If they didn't cover the White House, if they didn't write about this, if they didn't go to the morning press meetings at the White House every morning and listen to the lies that Sean Spicer is throwing out at the media, they wouldn't be doing their jobs. It's their jobs to write about the White House, no matter what president is in the office at the time. Donald Trump does not respect that. Donald Trump opened the paper every morning and he sees all these negative things about him and he gets pissed off. Most of the things are true, but he will deny them. His surrogates, his minions, his bullies, his goons would come on these talk show hosts, these talk shows on Sunday, and just lie their asses off. They lie their asses off. and I just love it when the host of those shows just bring it back and just tell them where they can stick it. Like I said before, I would never have Kellyanne Conway on my show. I'm pretty sure she probably wouldn't want to come. But if she did, she would not be on my show, because I'm not going to let anybody come on my show, take it over, control it, and tell me to shut up. It ain't going to happen. You know, you get off. You get out. And some of the cable shows are saying exactly that. They don't want these lying fools coming on their show because they are not credible. They are not. They are not. Donald Trump get these fools and you know, send them out on these shows, and they just make asses out of themselves. They make asses out of Donald Trump. You couldn't tell them that, but that's what's happening. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, folks. It is warm outside. I just can't believe how nice it is. And it's going to be even better tomorrow. It is 7:14 straight up Chicago time in the evening, 7:14 p.m. And it is around 50 degrees from where I am. And I hope wherever you are around the world that you are having such a great time as I am, especially pertaining to the weather forecast, especially in the city of Chicago, because I do know on the East Coast, they have really been hit by some snowstorms, blizzards, things like that. And I hope it's okay where you are. And I hope, you know, people can find their way through that. But we don't want snow here. We really don't. And the media people are constantly saying, we need snow. We need it to be cold. No, we do not need it to be cold. And we don't need 15 to 20 inches of snow just because it's February. We're going to get it. It's going, like I said before, earlier into the show, that we're being set up for the kill. It's nice now. It's 60 now. But next week or next month, it's going to be 30 below zero. And we're going to be freezing our asses off. So we're going to accept this nice weather that we're having, and we're not going to complain. We're going to go out and enjoy ourselves. And like I said before, especially to the seniors, get out and enjoy yourself. Walk, 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 walk. Enjoy yourself out here in this good, good weather. It may not happen again the way things are going with the climate change, if there's any possibility of there being a climate change. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting on the north side of Chicago, near Lake Michigan, in my studio, which I love. I just love it. And we're going to be after today's show wraps up. The George Wilder Jr. Show. After this show wraps up, we're going to be off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will be back here on Monday, a week slated full of great guests to be on the show. Can't wait for that. I'm pretty sure they have a lot to tell you, tell me, and things that we can learn from together on the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's great. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in, always tuning in and listening to the show. This show is like no other show. And I know it. I know it. I've listened to a lot of Block Talk Radio radio podcast hosts. A lot of them are good. A lot of them are really, really good. And I'm a fan in some cases. But it's this one lady, I'll never forget her. I'm not going to say who she is. You might recognize her, but her podcast is like, "Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show." Now, who can be on somebody's show like that? I can. I think I can, because she's a sweet lady. I make fun of her a lot, because she has this high voice and she's just so nice. She doesn't really sound like a radio host. She sounds like somebody's grandmother, actually. Probably is. But she's sweet. She's sweet. And I'm just making fun. I'm trying to make fun and probably shouldn't do it. But, you know, anyway, follow me on Facebook. Always follow me on Facebook. I'm always there. Even sometimes when I'm doing the show, I'm looking at Facebook on another monitor here, and Twitter. I have a Twitter account. It's ironic because every time I post to Facebook, it always ends up on Twitter also. It's no matter what I post. So if I post something to Facebook, it ends up on Twitter. If I post something on Huffington Post, it ends up on Twitter and Facebook. So I guess that's a good thing. You know, I mean, I guess that means that more people are seeing what I post and what I address. So Anyway, if you want to know a lot of any more about me, just Google my name. That's all you got to do. If anybody out here ever Googled their name, I have. And sometimes I'm surprised with what I discover. Really, really. I remember one time I Googled my name, George Wilder Jr., and another person popped up. And he was rough looking. He was dark. He was a criminal, you know. It popped up on my page, and I was frantically trying to delete this guy because I didn't want people coming by my page and thinking that was me, that I had actually spent 20 years in prison, and that wasn't me. I'm the guy with the big glasses on. So, you know, that's not me, but I think they got it together and deleted the pictures somehow, because I think the people at Google knew that that wasn't me, because I do have an account with them. But still and all, I guess what I'm saying here is there's always somebody out there with your name. I mean, George Wilder. I mean, I believe there's thousands and thousands of people with that name. And but there's not too many people called George Wilder Jr. There is a few. I've ran across a few. But I guess what I'm saying is you have to get that straight. I mean, if your name is Sarah Brown and you go to Google your name, you're going to get a thousand Sarah Brown. So you have to figure out a way to distinguish yourself and to bring yourself forward, distinguish yourself away from those other names is what I'm trying to say. It happens. I guess what I'm trying to say, folks, if someone comes up on my page says that they have that they're George Wilder Jr. and it's not me, you know, because I'm the guy with the big sunglasses on. That's me. And I'm African-American. And I'm on Facebook, I'm on Google, I'm on Amazon.com. I've got a lot of stuff published. Yeah, when I think about it, I got a lot of stuff that I'm going to be publishing in a month or so. Basically short stories, because I love short stories. I love the genre of writing short stories because they're easy, they're quicker, they're faster. And when you write a short story, you really have to get to the action or the premise of the story or the main idea really quickly, because it's short and you have to really satisfy your readers in a short story. You really got to give them something in a short story, because most people are used to reading novels 100 pages or more. Okay. And you have to, when you do a short story, it really has to be some meat in that short story that's going to grab that reader right away. Wow, it's a short story, but it's a great short story, you know. Then some readers, they will not read short stories for the simple reason that they're short. Because I had a few people contact me to tell me, George, it's a great story, but it was too short. George, it was a great story, but you left us hanging. George, it was a great story, you didn't put enough in it. But still, they gave me good reviews on it. And one of the things that I found out, if you're going to write a short story, you make sure you let the people, the readers, know that it is a short story. Because if you don't, they're going to think it's a novel. And when it cuts off and ends, they may be very upset and go to your Amazon page and give you a bad review, simply because they felt that you left them hanging, or it wasn't enough in the story. But I think in my stories, matter of fact, I know in most of my stories, I throw the whole kitchen sink into them. So, and basically in my stories, they are very, very, they'll grab you from the first page. And I've had readers tell me that, George, when I read one of your stories, when I read your book, I could not put it down until I read it all the way to the end. It was good. It was engrossing. Thank you so much. And a lot of the people who read my stuff, I wish they would come by my Amazon page and you know, give it a review. Review it. Pick something there to read, download it, and review it. That's one of the greatest things any author will appreciate is a review. I'm not saying give it a great review, give it a 5-star review, just review it and just give it what you think it might deserve, you know? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show at 724 in the city of Chicago. It is still great weather, folks. And once again, I want to thank my magnificent guest, Jamal Maxam, for doing a great job and talking about his book that's coming up, Skip the Rat Race. I think it's wonderful. I think he sounds like a great, intelligent, bright young man. So, I mean, go out there and get his stuff. All right. Do it for the George Wilder Jr. Show. And we will be off until Monday. We do this every week. I've been doing this every week for 3 years. We'll be off every Monday. We'll be off tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. We will be back here on Monday. Sometimes that gets screwed up.
Help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Anyone ever saw? Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
All right, I want to thank everybody. We will be off the air Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. We will be right back here on Monday. And I want to thank everybody for joining me. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank my guests for the entire week, actually. They all have been great, at least the ones who have shown up. Okay. All right. I'll see you guys Monday. And you know what? There's always podcasts on this website. And you can listen to any podcast, any time of the day, any time of the night. The George Wilder Jr. Show is always here, even if I'm not on the air live. All right. Bye-bye, everybody. crazy.
I told you.